Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. I'm back on a Wednesday. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. It is great to be back. Joy Taylor is joining me in an absolute packed show. Nick Wright will be joining us later this hour. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Welcome back.
It is great to be back. Hope you had a nice few days without me. I want to thank Doug Gottlieb and everybody, and Joy and everybody and the staff for filling in. Hung out for a couple days. Don't get those rare vacations with my wife much. Had a lot of fun. A couple margaritas.
Good.
Some sunshine. Little boat. Fishing. All that stuff. And here we are. Let me just say, when you're single, a guy thinks he has power. I can do what I want. I'm single. I can go out tonight. I can go to bed when I want. But you don't have any power. You're just a guy. Power is when you marry a strong woman like Tom Brady and Giselle, and she has a point of view, and she's got a power brace, base, and you become a power couple. J-Lo and A-Rod's a power couple. A-Rod's never been stronger. Tom Brady and Giselle, Russell Wilson and Ciara are now a power couple. Guys tend to think they have power when they're single. Power is when you marry somebody, conjoin with somebody who also has a strong point of view, who holds you accountable, who tells you things you don't want to hear, who forces you on a daily basis to think about others, who whispers in your ear, you deserve better, demand more. Russell Wilson is demanding the Seattle Seahawks make him the highest paid player. He deserves every penny, by the way. And I think he will sign a mega deal. But this is the new Russell Wilson. The more Tom Brady spent with Giselle, Tom demanded more respect from Bill Belichick. It is now Brady's team as much as Belichick's. It was all Belichick pre-Giselle. This is no longer Pete Carroll's team. This is no longer the Legion of Doom or Boom. This is Russell Wilson's franchise. Sierra's going to make sure it is. Russell, Ciara are an American power couple. I stand by my story 6 weeks ago. Told by an entertainment agent, they were going to be wanting to spend more time in New York, maybe playing football there, but spending more time there. She's got a real career. I think he'll sign a deal, and Seattle knows they have to, and I would give up 5 first-round picks to get him. I think he's one of the most underrated players in league history. But this is now a two-person power couple. Agents don't love Seattle. It's geographically isolated. It's either if you're in L.A. way up there or in New York as an agent way out there. Every great Mariner seemingly leaves. The NBA left. It's geographically way up there. Russell Wilson, he's going to get it. He earned it. He deserves it. And he and CR are going to demand it. This is now our franchise. If we're going to stay here and be geographically isolated in not a mega entertainment capital, we're going to be the highest paid quarterback couple in the league. By the way, he set a deadline. That's very off-brand for him. He's always been a team guy, right? Every time he comes on the show. I love him. Comes on the show often. He's my favorite quarterback outside of Brady, maybe, of all time. When he comes on the show, a lot of people say, well, he can have cliches. He doesn't on our show. He's very talkative. But generally, it's about the team. It's about us. It's about we. This is about him taking over the franchise. This is Russell Wilson's team. By the way, deserved it. Last year, third in passer rating behind Breeze and Mahomes. 35 touchdowns, 7 picks, which is absolutely remarkable, considering they still don't have a great offensive line. But guys think they tend to have their most power when they're single, and you've got none of it. You don't have any of it. You're just a dude, a million of you. Power is joining up with somebody who also has a career and a point of view and is smart and is beautiful and is strong and challenges you and tells you repeatedly, you deserve more than that boss is giving you, and you deserve more than that team is giving you. Russell Wilson's always played nice. Those days are over. It's his franchise. It's his city. He could do a Robinson Cano there briefly and leave. But if you're gonna make sure you're gonna keep him and not go play at a mega entertainment capital, replace Phillip Rivers with the Chargers, be in Los Angeles, go to New York and replace Eli Manning, you gotta make him the highest paid player in the league. Good for him. Deserves every penny of it. Let's shift gears to this. Actually, it was a touching moment last night. Russell Westbrook, not my favorite NBA player, did 20-20 and 20. 20 points, 20 assists, 20 rebounds. Not very many players in the history of the league could do that. Russell's one of them. And it was a tribute, he said after the game, to Nipsey Hussle, who was sadly, brutally murdered, Los Angeles native, well, Westbrook friend, fan of his music and friends. And after the game, Westbrook doesn't talk a lot, doesn't let you inside his personality. He's a pretty private guy. Came out and said, this is for Nipsey. So that's cool. And this is not the day to pick on Westbrook. An emotional night for him, 20-20-20. Didn't love him waving off the coach, doing his things. I think he's too into stats, kind of the anti-warrior. But it was a nice night. But I will say this. I've never argued this is what he can do. Right? We all know that, right? I know he's talented, and I know he can do the triple-doubles. But rent is now due. And this team's been awful for 2 months. They have not won back-to-back more than one time since the All-Star break. They're 8-15 since the All-Star break. And Russell's shooting a lot now, like a lot. And Paul George is kind of disappearing, and Steven Adams isn't getting numbers. Rent is due. The collections are coming. Last night was an emotional moment for Russell Westbrook, and he deserves appreciation for that. And he is an all-time unique player. I mean, if somebody 20 years from now said Russell Westbrook, I would be like triple-double, unique, relentless. I mean, those are all the words. But the NBA is a really long season. And the NBA media spends 5 months trying to find stories, and Westbrook is the best undercard in the sport. He's a constant story. With his relentlessness, his play, his triple doubles, his personality, his rigidity, all of it. He is the best undercard fighter. But the main event in the pay-per-view in the NBA is the postseason. That's when everybody watches. That's when the ratings quadruple. And he has not been good in the main event. He has not been good on pay-per-view. And rent is due, and collections are coming, and it is time. And there's only five teams in the NBA with multiple all-stars. There's five. All those teams in the NBA, there's five. And there's going to be one that probably gets swept out of the first round. You got a Hall of Famer in Russell. Paul George is an MVP candidate. Steven Adams, a hell of a third player. Grant can play. And they're going to get waxed right now. Eighth, they're struggling. It's not about Westbrook's ability to put up massively impressive, unique numbers. That is not it. And I actually liked that he took off the body armor last night, let us in a little bit. Was a human being, because he's often just been a human doing. He gives us volume and stats. I like that. And we should acknowledge that. And I will acknowledge that. It's a real human moment, and it's awesome. But we are now about 10 games out of the playoffs, and that is the main event, and that is pay-per-view. And that's where the Warriors stand into that ring and blow everybody out and knock them out in the first, second, third round. And so that time is coming. And I think for Russell Westbrook, I'd like to see a little less on the numbers and a little more on Paul George, because I've seen this movie before. Hangover 1, triple-double MVP year, everybody watched it and was kind of blown away how great it was. And then Hangover 2, not as many people watched it, and I felt like it was repetitive, and I'm getting triple-doubles, and I don't care as much. This is becoming Hangover 3, which is nobody cares, and it's repetitive, and it seems like not to matter much. And to be honest, there are some nights with Westbrook, he's not even on the call sheet. Like, he's supposed to let Paul George do the speaking roles and stuff. That's going to be really important, because Billy Donovan is never called into question. And the NBA is a league where they fire coaches unfairly and regularly, good coaches. This is the only league where the coach of the year winner is often fired within the year. And yet Billy Donovan is never even suggested to be in trouble. and he won't be after they get knocked out of the first round potentially again. Today they face the Warriors. And the reason is Westbrook's hard to play with. He is relentless, and sometimes relentless is really hard to play with. Great night. Happy for him. I thought it was a very human touch with Nipsey Hussle. And not many people in the history of the world of basketball can do a 20-20-20. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I imagine Wilt did it a bunch. You know, Wilt was different. Wilt was...
He's the second player to go 20-20-20 for a triple-double in NBA history since Wilt in 1968.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of Wilt. I'm old enough, I saw a little bit of Wilt. I didn't see great Wilt. I saw old, crazy headband Wilt, who was harder to play with. Laker Wilt. Old Laker Wilt with Jerry West. But in the end, we all know what this sport's about. This long regular season that we're all kind of, let's get through it. And Westbrook's a headliner on that undercard. But here comes the main event and here comes pay-per-view. And that will define this season for all the great players.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
When you do this career long enough, there are topics you get really tired of. There's one topic I will not do anymore. I'm just tired of it. And the topic is this, and I see other shows at other networks do it, and I just won't do it. If my staff says, hey, let's do this one, I'm like, I'm not going to do that topic. That topic is, I put it in the topic cemetery down the road. The topic is, hey, and you'll always see the shows that do it'll have it on a bar at the bottom of the, hey, can this blank, really great team flip a switch for the playoffs? The answer is yes, always. They always can. Michael Jordan's Bulls got bored, and the Showtime Lakers got bored, and Shaq and Kobe got bored, and the Warriors get bored. I won't do the topic. Yes, great dynasties in the NBA after a couple of championships get bored and they can all flip a switch. The Golden State Warriors, the last three times they've played pesky Denver, the number two seed in the West, they've beaten them by 14, 17, and 31. It's a reminder that my dad had to do about twice a year. Remind me he was dad. And Denver, you are adorable. You are just adorable. You're like Toronto. Historically irrelevant. You have a really good coach. You have a deep roster. You play your butts off every night. And the regular season matters a ton. And then every time you play Golden State, they just clobber you, and it's not competitive. And Golden State's the greatest offensive team in league history. I'm not saying the greatest team. I think Jordan's Bulls were probably, if you use some of the old rules and some of the new rules, I think Jordan's Bulls were just stronger and tougher physically. And at their best, the 95 Jordan Bulls would beat this team. But this is the best offensive team I've ever seen. It's the greatest collection of offensive talent. Last night, it was Boogie Cousins, their fourth best offensive player, dominating. They're filthy good, and they'll flip a switch. And the KD distraction, is he going to play here, is absolutely no distraction, nor was his technical last night. Their biggest obstacle is apathy. It's boredom. Same with the Showtime Lakers. MJ's Bulls had a year. They lost to expansion Toronto once or twice. I will no longer do flip a switch topics. They're just tedious, dumb, and not thoughtful. They're in my topic cemetery. Last night is the classic example of, oh, hey, guys, Denver's in town. Oh, Denver that thinks they're going to end up as the number one seed. All right, let's bring it. 15 minutes in, you're like, okay. Okay, Denver's an adorable story. But and Denver will win a playoff series, just not against Golden State. So, yes, they can flip a switch. And they did, and they'll do it throughout the course of the season. But it should be noted, several times this year, the Warriors went out and got beat by 30 when they didn't have anything to prove, because basketball is about showing up. I had a coach tell me years ago, he goes, I could take an average roster, but if they played hard every night, you can win 42 games. You can win 40. You can go 500 on effort, because the good teams, they're not giving you great effort. They're picking their spots. The Saturday TV game. And he goes, if you play them Monday after the Saturday TV game, you get a team that just does not care. And sometimes you can even pick them off. The Michael Jordan Bulls lost a lot of home games. Not a lot, but notable home games after big TV games. The Warriors did what the great teams do, and they're great.
What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff with a 3 and Out podcast. If you like Colin's show, you'll like mine. I'm talking all football. Coming up on today's show, I'm talking Zion Williamson, yeah, of Duke, and how he relates to some NFL prospects. The Cleveland Browns introduce Odell Beckham. They're officially rock stars. And what to look for and what matters in these private workouts. Again, John Middlecoff and the 3 and Out podcast.
So Bryce Harper used to play for the Washington Nationals, the most underachieving team in baseball. All sorts of talent can never win a big playoff series. And then Philadelphia said, now we're going to pay him more. And he goes now to rival Philadelphia, which I don't love these 12-year contracts. I love Bryce. I wouldn't give anybody a 12-year contract. And Bryce Harper last night went to D.C. to play against the team he used to play for. And he hit a ball so hard, it has not landed. It's still rolling somewhere in the burbs of D.C. Here it is.
2-2, swing and a drive, deep right center field, and that ball is gone into the second deck. And Bryce Harper, in his return to Washington, has crushed it.
And he also flipped the bat, which will probably get him thrown at today because, of course, baseball. Major League Baseball's official Twitter account, though, last night did something that's interesting. It posted the bat flip. Hashtag let the kids play. Folks, baseball is in a battle with its own players and its old rigid coaches and some of its own cranky old broadcasters. They're doing a commercial for the last year. And what is absolutely stunning and remarkable, and I love the campaign, is they're not targeting fans. Fans don't complain about bat flips. Just like fans never complained about Reggie Jackson or Mark Fidrich or Al Roboski or Mickey Rivers or Pete Rose. In the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s, you could have a personality. Now it gets you thrown at. Bryce Harper years ago in D.C. had to get into a fight with his own teammate because he was pleading with his pitchers on his staff, don't throw it, guys, because they'll end up throwing at me. Here's the series of ads running in Major League Baseball right now. They're brilliant. They're smart. But what's fascinating is they're not targeting consumers. They're in a battle against their old cranky players and managers. Play the tape on this. Play the sound on this.
World Series and the next one.
I'm going to hit 50 home runs this year.
I'm going to hit 60, 70, yeah. 71, 72, 73, 74, 75.
I'm going to hit 80 home runs.
Anything you want to say?
Just let the kids play.
Personality, opinions, bat flips, old cranky people. That's why the NBA gets all this free publicity. They've got stars. By the way, everybody in baseball loves Mike Trout because he plays the game the right way. Mike Trout's played 6 games this year. He's already 5 games out of first place. Bryce Harper's team's undefeated because Bryce Harper adds a swag, an energy, juice to a clubhouse that Mike doesn't. Mike's just a great player and a great kid. The Phillies are the 4-0 for the first time since 1915. There's nothing wrong playing the game the way Mike Trout does. And there's nothing wrong playing the game the way Manny Ramirez and Yasiel Puig and Bryce Harper play it. By the way, there's a lot of great NBA players. Alex English was great. Kiki Vandeweghe was great. They didn't have big personalities, but it was okay to be Charles Barkley. And it's okay to have big personality. And it's okay, like LeBron, to move from team to team and Kevin Durant to be finicky. And it's okay. It's part of the soap opera of sports. In tennis, John McEnroe threw rackets. Roger Federer's all class. It's okay. We can have both. Baseball is literally doing an ad campaign, not to me or you, to fight off its own rigidity from its own players and its own cranky managers and some of their cranky broadcasters. Lighten the you-know-what up, baseball. This is awesome. And this is, not only is Bryce Harper the face of baseball, he is the direction baseball should go. And Rob Manfred, tip of the cap. I love the campaign. You don't have to play like Bryce. I'm not saying that. But you shouldn't have to be Mike Trout. Be both.
I've been saying this for years, and baseball has a perfect opportunity for it because they don't wear helmets. So you can brand your stars very easily. They have so many games. They travel the entire country. I went to, have you ever been to the World Baseball Classic?
No, but it's incredibly fun.
It's the best baseball environment I've ever been in.
And that's that. That's where you get like the Caribbean,
right,
and
Team
Cuba,
Italy, Dominican Republic, yeah. Puerto Rico, obviously USA. And the games are like a football game. I've never seen anything like it. I was like, why aren't all the games like this? This is so fun. Everyone is out of their seat the whole time, chanting. It's like being at a football game.
And, Joy, baseball's a world game.
Exactly.
Asia gives us players. America.
It's an international game. It should be celebrated. Stars should be elevated. And the most important thing is what you just said. Everybody doesn't have to play the game the same way. It's almost – baseball has almost an elitist air about it when it's America's pastime. Like, why would you want everybody to be the same?
Look, in soccer is a global game. But soccer understands that if you're a global sport, football's not. Football's domestic. Or college, right. It's not. But if you're a global sport and I'm baseball, that means I'm welcoming in players from Cuba. Have you ever thought that their style is different than ours? If you're a global sport like basketball, basketball is a global sport. So the German player and the Spanish player and Steve Nash, the Canadian player, and then the domestic player, they come from different cultures and different backgrounds, and some are celebratory and some are less celebratory. That's fine. Germans are not known as big celebrators.
You know what it feels like? It feels like they've forgotten that at the end of the day, this is entertainment.
Yes.
And it's almost like we are above the entertainment factor. We're really just a true sport.
If you go to Europe, every single country within Europe has a different personality. Like Germans are known as savers, engineers, savers, That's just, it's very intense. I've had family members live there. Very, very intense. And then you get the Greek culture, which is fun, and it's like a vacation mecca. It's a different culture. It's a different sense of style and self, and it's okay. Not every place has to be the same, and not every sport, you can have different personalities. Let Bryce Harper flip his bat. I don't know. What happened about in the last 15 years? You couldn't have any personality.
But
you couldn't have any flair.
The unwritten rules.
Unwritten rules. There's too many rules. Forget the unwritten ones. I can't figure out the written rules in all these sports. I don't want unwritten rules. I want fun and personality, and I love the direction. It's The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So it's very interesting. Mike McCarthy was fired by the Green Bay Packers, and there's a story out, and there's a lot of interesting information. He's a really nice guy. He's an amazingly nice guy. The way the Packers fired him was incredibly cold. I won't get into that. But he said in the story that he got 500 texts the day he was fired and only 200 the day he won the Super Bowl from people within the NFL, which shows you what kind of guy he is. I've said this before. Everybody I know in football, he's like Andy Reid. You can't find anybody to badmouth Andy Reid within the NFL. Goofy fans do. Nobody in the league does. You can't find anybody to badmouth Mike McCarthy within the league. He's like a good guy, and he's a smart guy, and the stories are fascinating about him. But there's a quote here about, and it's a legitimate question. He was on a podcast, and he's asked about dealing with Aaron Rodgers, and he speaks in code. And if you got a divorce with somebody, but you still had mutual friends and you didn't want to badmouth that person, you would speak in code, right? You'd make it known how you felt, but you don't want to bury somebody. So talking about Aaron Rodgers, he said, quote, he's challenging, very rewarding and fun. The difficulty in coaching a Hall of Famer is keeping that connection, the efficiency and the fluency with other players on the offense. You got to remember, it's coordinating 11 men on every play. That, my friend, is code. That is code. Challenging, the difficulty working with others. If I got a divorce and she was high maintenance, let's say, and beautiful, but I got it, and I came out, and we had mutual friends, and I said, well, it was a challenging relationship and there was some difficulty connecting, and let's be honest about a family. It's all about coordinating everybody's needs. That would be code for pain in the butt. Greg Cosell basically said the exact same thing Mike McCarthy did, but he doesn't have to speak in code when he talks about Aaron Rodgers.
The reality is, when you watch Aaron Rodgers, and it takes nothing away from his performances over the years, but he's not truly a rhythm player, Colin. He's kind of an offbeat player, an off-rhythm player. He's more like a jazz beat. He's a second reaction player. And very often, there are throws that are there within the rhythm of the play and the timing of the play, and he doesn't make those throws. Now, he might move around and then make another throw, but there are times against really good defenses where that doesn't work. It's tough to be consistent that way against higher-level defenses.
And what has Aaron struggled with in his career? Against better teams and good defenses? Because as Mike McCarthy, a classy guy, said, in code, he's challenging. And the difficulty is connecting with other players. And the reality is it's coordinating 11 men on every play. For years and years, many of the American media members compared Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, and I always said they have nothing in common. They have nothing in common. They're not even the same personality. I mean, Aaron's fought with his family. They've called him out publicly. Brady's all about family. Aaron Rodgers is Big Ben. Difficult. If Mike Tomlin ever got fired, this is what Mike Tomlin would say. He's challenging. And the difficulty with a Hall of Fame quarterback is connecting with other players on offense, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. It's coordinating 11 men on every play. Aaron is Big Ben. And Mike McCarthy's too classy, but that is code.
It's a backhanded compliment. Hall of Fame player, challenging.
If I was divorced and said she was challenging and the difficulty was connecting and coordinating with the family, everybody's...
Yeah, you just slip a beautiful and successful in there, and, you know, you got your quote.
That's funny. Just slip a... Anytime you're talking about somebody you want backhand, just put a beautiful and successful in there. And
challenging, then you can... Hall of Fame, beautiful, successful.
That's funny.
Other people.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
My next guest played for over a decade in the NBA. Half of his career, he was an all-star. Was a great college basketball player in the 70s with UCLA. I remember a kid growing up watching Marcus Johnson play. He is now a Milwaukee Bucks analyst. And I'm, of course, hated in Milwaukee because I don't believe they'll win the championship. And I don't think you go from very little playoff to success to beating the Warriors. But I got to show you a piece of video of Marcus. This is him, I think, in his backyard. Play the tape.
All right, look, my birthday was a few days ago. I turned 63 years old. I didn't do my birthday dump because I didn't know if I had another one in me. Then I found out I made the Naismith Hall of Fame as a finalist. Me and my boy, Sid the Squid, Mike Creve, finalist Naismith Hall of Fame. Got to get one more in me. Here we go. Fear the deer. Fear the deer.
Fear the deer. 63-year-old dunk machine. Let's bring him on. Marcus Johnson, Milwaukee Bucks analyst. Man alive. The hips are a little sore.
Yeah, man. Sore just watching that.
Pull that thing up.
Yes, sir.
Let's start. The Bucks just retired your jersey. Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That.
Thank you. Big honor. Yes,
you were
indeed.
The handsome. When I remember when I was a kid, you were the handsome UCLA guy. You symbolized UCLA basketball. You were cool. You were handsome. You were good. And you always beat my teams. So then you go to the NBA and you play and you have a nice career. Now you're doing television work. Milwaukee's a fascinating team.
Okay. Watch yourself now.
Now, here's why they're fascinating.
Watch yourself, Colin.
Now, there's two things. There's one thing which leads me to believe they're not going to get to the finals, which is history, which is generally in the NBA, it's baby steps.
Okay.
Is that you go to the playoffs and you get bounced. Then you go and you win a playoff series or two. And then all of a sudden, pop. All your players, Chris Middleton, Giannis, they all develop this metal and this body armor. And it's like, okay, let's go. So that tells me they're not going to win the championship. There's the other thing, though, that is unique. They've got the most double-digit wins, meaning they're blowing people out. And if you go look at the history of the NBA, the other five teams that beat this many teams badly all won the championship.
Right.
So which team are they? The one that you're a little worried about their lack of playoff resume, or the one that's beaten the you-know-what out of people? What are they somewhere in between, Marcus? What are they?
Well, and your point about double-figure wins. I think we have 45, which is seventh most in NBA history, and every one of those other seven teams went on to win an NBA championship.
It's a real number.
What it speaks to me, Colin, and look, I don't
think that that's going to automatically transfer to championship medal and success right. necessarily. But it does speak to a team that has the ability, the unique ability, to impose their will on opponents. And that's what the playoffs are all about. That's where this team fell short last year in Game 7 in Boston.
Right.
Against a Celtic team that was depleted. No Hayward, no Kyrie Irving, obviously. But still, we'll have home court advantage. I think one game to clinch that all throughout the playoffs. It falls somewhere in between, but more leaning toward, I think, success. Now, I'm with you. To me, Eastern Conference success, finals, Eastern Conference Finals, getting into the NBA Finals would be just a tremendous, tremendous step for this team at this stage of their development.
So stage is the interesting word.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I tend to think championship teams, there was the Steph's a new guy, and the Warriors were interesting.
Right.
Golden State was a little like Milwaukee. They popped a year faster than historically you're supposed to. Remember, they like one year they lost to the Clippers after like the second round. Next year, they were the best.
Sure.
So Golden State, like Milwaukee, popped before we thought they were great.
Right, right.
So here's my question. We know Giannis is going to get his. Is Chris Middleton ready in a game 6 or 7 on the road? A game 6 on the road.
Yeah.
5 on the road. Is Chris Middleton ready to drop a 27-point game?
Well, he did that last year against Boston. He was a guy that averaged, I think, 27 a game in that first playoff series against the Boston Celtics last year. Now, he's dealing with a minor kind of groin tenderness that has caused him to sit out a couple of games. I don't think it's anything that is going to cause him to miss any games come playoff time. But recently, he's had a couple of 30-point games, had a 39-point game in 33 minutes the other night. I mean, the coaching staff, Mike Budenholzer, his staff, Colin, they've done a great job of minute management with these guys. Chris Middleton, Giannis, last year, they were 2 and 7 in minutes played. This year, I mean, they're not anywhere close to that. I think they just barely cracked the top 40.
By the way, that's a thing.
Yeah.
By the way.
That's a major thing.
It's a major thing in the NBA, which is get over this need to impress, like impress people in the regular season. Rest your players. So Milwaukee's doing a much better job of resting
And they've rested their players and still have the best record in the league. We're 58-20 right now, but with guys having played reduced minutes. Last year, I think we were the fifth ranked team in terms of starters and minutes played. This year, we're 16th, and you got the Rockets, you got the Warriors, you got the Thunder, you got a bunch of teams, the Raptors, that have all played their starters a lot more minutes than we have. So this coaching staff has done a remarkable job of the duality of purpose in terms of success, resting players, but still maintaining a high level of excellence in terms of winning basketball games. So you got to give the coaching staff a lot of credit for that, too.
Shaq said Giannis is better than me. I don't think he is yet. But when you watch Giannis, there's things we all see. His length is absurd. Yeah. I mean, it's just like he may be the longest player in league history. He's a nice kid. What's something, if I don't watch him every night, you do as a Bucks TV analyst? What separates him? What surprises you?
How hard he works and his will to win. And you hear that often. So a couple of stories. Last year we played against, I think it was the Blazers. He struggled from the free throw line. I think we still won the game. So I'm walking to my car. It's a Milwaukee night. It's about -2 outside, probably colder than that with the wind chill. And I see this tall frame, this skinny brother with an undershirt on and shorts in that cold weather, weaving his way in and out of the crowd, headed toward the practice facility. And my first thought is like, who is that fool? Then I look closer, like, that's Giannis. And Giannis was going to work on his free throws at the practice facility because he struggled so much. The other thing is New Year's Day this year, I told Giannis, I reminded him of a story. My first year on New Year's Day, he came up to me. He's like, old school, I watch film of you. I'm going to get buckets like you got buckets. That's my New Year's resolution. So I reminded him of that, and I said, this year, what was your New Year's resolution this year? And he said, to be the best version of myself. And this is at 24 years old.
That's a real smart thing.
Well, all I can think about is, like, I'm thinking, like, how long is the club going to stay open? How long is Park Avenue going, you know? And he's thinking about being the best. And it's genuine. He's one of the most.
Right.
And that's the other thing that stands out. He's one of the most genuine people. Doesn't need a lot of attention. Doesn't seek a lot of attention. And he's just a real dude that I just love being around.
Couple NBA topics. Kevin, this is a fascinating thing to me. That in the history of sports, you can almost never find an example of a star player going from a well-run organization to a poorly run organization and being happy. That we undervalue the owner and the GM and the culture. Milwaukee right now is a really good culture, not just good players. Kevin Durant leaving the Warriors if he won a third title to the Knicks makes absolutely no sense to me. I don't get it. I understand, you know, players want their own team. When you hear that story, in your day, would a player have left the Lakers? By the way, in your day, the Bucks were great.
Yeah.
The Lakers were well run. The Washington Bullets at the time. The Sonics.
Right.
What do you make of Durant leaving Golden State after potentially a third title? What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, you've got a Nick in turn, Nick team, Nick organization that is trying to elevate kind of that perception of them in management. So Steve Mills and the other people that are involved, I think it's too soon. The jury's still out in terms of where they are right now. I understand your point. Look, I went from the Bucks to the Clippers with Donald Sterling, and Don Nelson called me into his office and said, look, MJ, we do things differently here. I'm sending you out here to the Clippers, and they do things on a whole nother level that you're not accustomed to.
So you've done that.
And he was absolutely right.
Right.
But with Kevin Durant and the Knicks, I understand your point, but let's give the Knicks, I think, some credit. I mean, David Fizdale, who's a local guy here in L.A., played against my son when he was at Fremont High School. I love him in terms of his ability to relate to players and some of the comments about accountability and the things that he's demanding of players. I think they're a destination that could be on the rise. It's too early for me to say right now that it's a bad organization.
Okay.
I know historically, you know, we could probably say that, but at this point in time, I couldn't make that judgment.
That's fair enough. LeBron James is not going to make the playoffs. I doubt he makes all NBA because he just hadn't played enough games this year. He had a very good year. I'm not denying that, although I thought he took the year off defensively.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he was hurt for a big chunk.
Yeah.
But I want you to, because in your day, who were the three biggest stars in the league in your day?
Bird, Magic, and...
You could stop right there.
Yeah, I can't do it. Need I say more?
Okay.
Bird, Magic, two guys I had to guard, like, all the time.
Right.
Too. Yeah.
So LeBron's to a point, I always say... He's in the mogul stage. There's the showing off I'm really good. There's the I got to win my Grammys and I got to win my titles to validate. Got to win an Oscar. And then Michael Jordan, Kobe, last few years, it's the mogul stage.
Yeah.
I love basketball, but I'm going to take care of my legacy and my brand and my money. LeBron today, I saw Juwan Howard's name as a coach. Does that work to you? If it does, why?
On the face of it, you say Juwan Howard. Now, where does that come from? But then when you kind of do a little bit deeper dive and you realize that he had 8 years in the Miami Heat organization under the headship of Pat Riley, which is, you know, pretty good guy to kind of be under the headship of, and Eric Spoelstra, who was his coach. And you talk to some of these current Heat and read things about them, James Johnson, Dion Waiters, they always talk about Wayne Ellington, this Miami organization, and how they were able to squeeze the best out of them, starting first with condition. So my point is that Juwan is not some guy that is coming directly from the league last year into the coach's seat. He served as an assistant coach for 5 years, 8 total years under Spoelstra, under Riley. I think he's paid his dues, coupled with the fact he's from Chicago. This is not some easy pushover dude that's going to take a lot of stuff and you can't cuss out in front of the team and not expect him to respond. I think if he needs to be confrontational, he will be confrontational, but in a manner that doesn't totally upset the apple cart when it comes to LeBron James.
Let's discuss, though. You saw Magic and Bird at the end. LeBron is at a point in his career where, listen, when you give a guy $500 million and you give him titles and legacy and TV shows, he's human. Okay, I've said LeBron's a little needier to me.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm needier now than I was in my 20s when I was fighting to get on the air. That neediness, do you sense it a little bit that when you coach LeBron and when you're around LeBron, there's certain things he's just going to demand from you, which a young player wouldn't?
Well, and that's why, to me, it's important to have someone that you go into a partnership when you're coaching LeBron, as opposed to I'm going to be the disciplinarian and crack the – that's not going to work. He's just – his stature in the league is just elevated to
and
such –
And he knows a lot.
And that's the other thing. He's just a treasure trove of knowledge and just wealth of information in terms of how to win basketball games. So why wouldn't you listen to a guy like that? Why wouldn't you not bring him into the office and figure out what's going on in his mind? Don Nelson was so good at that. He would always ask us what we saw out on the floor. And if we could explain to him in the midst of a turnover that I was trying to make something positive happen, he was good with that. And I think that's the kind of an approach you need with LeBron James, just to be able to communicate. Communication with these young guys, and then go back to Budenholzer and the Bucks. That's the biggest key to getting the best, knowing which buttons to push, when to push them, and you only understand that by spending time, quality time with these players and really getting to know them on a level so much outside of the basketball court.
By the way, take all the Milwaukee Bucks away. This Zion Williamson kid.
Mm.
he's
yeah,
he's 285. just your summation of what he is.
Well, the thing that impresses me the most, yeah, the athleticism. He's been a YouTube, you know, social media sensation
for about 3 years.
I was gonna say about 3 years now. So I've seen some of the craziness that he's done. But what impresses me the most, that we saw that during the NCAA tournament, Michigan State, that great second half run that he had, he has the ability to finish plays inside. It's one thing to be a great athlete, but what separates a great athlete from a great basketball player?
Giannis does this.
You got to be able to finish, and creative finishes. I mean, finger rolls, off the glass, floaters, whatever it takes, have that ability to finish once you get there. Sure, he can power through guys with the best of them, but his ability to finish is almost Barkley-esque. Charles Barkley was a guy at that size, that athleticism, but still could soften it up once he got around the rim. That's what's going to make Zion, I think, a tremendous scorer. He won't average 25, 27, whatever, I think, his rookie year, but in time, he'll be one of those guys that'll be one of the top five scorers.
I'll tell you something that's so sound crazy. You know what worries me? I saw what he did to that shoe. Here's what worries me. Ligaments, joints.
Yeah, sure.
He is so explosive. Yeah. I saw Tiger Woods torque ruin his back.
Right.
When you play at 285 with that power and torque, it sounds crazy,
yeah,
right, Marcus?
Right.
I'm like, I worry about his ligaments. No. I worry about his joints.
I'm right with you. We're on the same page when it comes to that. And so I go back to Charles Barkley, who came into the league 280, 285, but learned to pare it down to about, I think, 250, 260 after about 4 or 5 years. He was having some back issues,
yes,
for a time. And then
Shaq had.
Yeah. Learned to take some of that weight off. And it's funny, Dr. J, you talk about who were the great stars of my era. Dr. J, I left him off that list, but he would be that third guy,
yes,
that was that transformative player. But I came back 1 year, about my fourth year in the league. I was about 230, 235. And he's like, you put on weight. I was like, well, yeah, you know, I want to withstand the pounding. He's like, no, in this game, you got to get lighter as you get older. You don't get heavier because it's just too much on the skeletal, and that's before we had all the advanced.
How about that?
Yeah, all the advanced, you know, doctors and team trainers and skill development people. But he understood that at 30 years old, something that I had a hard time grasping at about 24, 25 years old.
Did he blow by you a few times? Yeah,
but funny story. But my rookie year, I got to know Doc. We played against each other in an all-star game in Hawaii before my rookie season. So he would come pick me up at the hotel in Philadelphia. He'd take me to lunch on game days at Bookbinders. And so we'd sit there, have lunch. He'd talk to me about basketball, about life. But he'd always, like, force this extra piece of cheesecake on me. I'd eat a piece of cheesecake. Oh, that was good. Hey, yeah, bring Marcus another piece of cheesecake. Said, doc, I've had enough. No. You love it here. Try some more. And then he'd go out and, like, just blow by me like a fatted turkey that night. It took about a year to realize that I needed to back off the cheesecake at lunch when I was with Dr. J. But I was just, you know, I was with Doc.
Offers you cheesecake.
Well, I was a fanboy, and Doc was my guy. And so he offered you cheesecake. You eat cheesecake. So,
God, what a great meeting you. Absolute pleasure to meet
man.
You. Love to have you on again.
Let's do it.
Hopefully when the Bucks are in the finals.
And so we'll see. Let's make a date. We'll see you in June.
Hey, by the way, Milwaukee, that's like 15 minutes with your guy here. Stop sending me hate tweets. Marcus Johnson, Bucks analyst.